Welcome to the Executive Challenge Academy Leadership Program. This series will focus on leading through challenging times. And during the series, you'll hear from a range of special guests who each offer their own unique perspective on what it takes to lead decisively and successfully with care and compassion. I'm your host, Rebecca Archer, a journalist and media industry professional with more than 20 years' experience. Joining me on the podcast today is Adam Gwynn, the Acting Assistant Commissioner for the Queensland Fire and Emergency Services Far Northern Region. Adam began his career with QFES more than 26 years ago, working through a rank-based system to his substantive position as Chief Superintendent, overseeing QFES operations in the Far North Queensland region, spanning more than 270,000 square kilometres. His career highlights include being awarded the Australian Fire Service Medal in recognition of passion and commitment to firefighting and building community resilience with community stakeholders. He's also been the commander of operations through many natural disasters, including cyclones, bushfires and floods, as well as the 2018 Commonwealth Games events in Far North Queensland. Adam has also been involved in leading an organisational cultural revolution across several regions and including about 8,000 staff. He's developed partnerships with 17 local Indigenous communities focused on embracing culture and people and creating a sustainable future. In addition, Adam has been involved in youth development with the introduction of emergency cadet groups in rural and remote communities. Adam is passionate about implementing place-based initiatives, local solutions to local issues, and his goal is to embed QFES as a community hub, bringing together government, private and social enterprise as a cohesive, collaborative entity. Adam, thanks so much for joining me today. I'd like to start by asking how your view of leadership has been evolving, specifically during the coronavirus pandemic.
It's been an interesting journey. People tend to react to the unknown or the fear. And because the information wasn't necessarily available or it wasn't forthright in what we know about the virus, it was particularly important, in my opinion, for those in the leadership positions to deal with the uncertainty. So I reflect back to two people that I looked at. And one was New Zealand and the other one was in America. So considering Adam Silver from the National Basketball Association, I thought that some of the important areas that he did, and then also the Prime Minister of New Zealand, so Jacinda Ardern. What I've seen and what I've done and experienced is about a situation, and we need to be situation-based. So we found that when a situation is uncertain, human instinct and basic management training, you know, can cause leaders, you know, out of fear of making the wrong decisions to unnecessarily make people anxious. And I find that to delay action and to downplay the threat until the situation becomes clearer. But behaving in this manner means that failing the coronavirus leadership test, because by the time the dimensions of the threat are clear, you're badly behind trying to control a crisis. So passing a test requires leaders to act in an urgent, honest and interactive fashion. What's most important for leaders is recognising that mistakes are inevitable and correcting the course, but not assigning blame. I think that's the best way to go through this.
And are you able to share some of your personal experiences of leading or living through the pandemic? What you've just mentioned obviously sounds like a long process of years and years of responding to crisis, and you've been able to apply that to the coronavirus pandemic. But on a personal level, how has it been for you?
Look, personally, it's been one of those matters where I think that I've literally just gone into, as you referred to, an operation crisis mode, which is just what we've been bred to do in the organisation. It was really, on a personal level, it was about keeping the friends and families grounded, where it's quite easy to get caught up in the hype of it. And I am very blessed that my family have lived and breathed my working career, so they are very grounded in their own right. In the workplace, we've had again to try and keep it grounded and not get caught up in the hype. And just by remaining calm and collected and cool, And discussing breaking down the bigger picture into smaller chunks has been a better way to manage the situation.
You mentioned in your first answer some types of leadership that tend to work in these situations. I'm wondering what your opinion might be about what doesn't necessarily work, and if you've got any other examples of things that really do work in response to a pandemic situation.
Look, I think that the important part is people to remain calm, and I frequently go back in history. I think history is a great teacher. And I spent time with the key staff here reflecting on areas like, and you know, it might sound a little obscure, but things like the Black Plague and other colds and flus and viruses that have travelled the world. We even spoke about HIV. And I keep reminding them that the human race is quite a resilient machine on its own. We've survived world wars and all sorts of bits and pieces. So we're certainly, you know, keeping them focused in that perspective that this is just, it's another hurdle that we face. We've had SARS issues before with Ebola and so on. So it's about keeping them grounded. And I found that's worked. What I find doesn't work is the, as I mentioned right at the beginning, is the overplay or the fear of taking steps and overreacting. But I think you've got to find the balance. You can go too hard too soon, and the result is that everyone remains safe, which is the key identity, but you also burn people out. So if you're living in a world of angst and you're living in a world of pushing hard quickly, people are burnt out. They're burnt out physically and they're burnt out emotionally, dealing with something that we really don't have a full picture on. So we don't want to go too hard in the process. We need to keep realistic and we need to keep aligned to what the requirements are, and we need to take into consideration those that are more educated. So everybody has a thought or a process on what should be done and shouldn't be done, but there are also people who have spent, if I make it very, very simplistic to my kids, I said there are people that spent a lot of time in university studying. You know more about health than I do. And we need to be guided by those decisions. So we need to just take a step-by-step process.
Absolutely. Now, I'm interested, you've obviously talked about the operational approach that you have to things, and particularly a crisis situation. I'm wondering, from this particular situation, so the COVID-19 pandemic, is there anything specifically that you have learned about yourself or your leadership style from this situation?
That's a really good question, Rebecca, because I think leadership is something that is a daily learning tool. I would struggle to point to one particular facet or one particular point in time where we had that epiphany, that light bulb moment. I think that it's something that we're learning on a day-to-day basis. And I think the key to it all is to remain flexible and agile and pragmatic also to a degree. For me personally, it's been taking a step at a time and then looking at the beginnings of it and how that relates into the future. So breaking it down into what does the next 3 days look like, the next 5 days, the next 12 days, the next 30 days, the next 2 months, and taking it down, as I mentioned earlier, back into smaller chunks. It's been a long, slow process. So probably the biggest learning for me was to slow down and have that realisation that if we didn't temper our reactions to it, then we would probably be a casualty, not because of coronavirus, of the actual virus itself, but actually as a result of the virus.
And Adam, you obviously look after an enormous region up there in far north Queensland. You've got quite a diversity of culture going on. I'm wondering, in your travels amid the pandemic, if there's anything that you've observed or learned about others from this situation, anything noteworthy that you could share with us?
You are dead right. We live in one of the most unique places of Australia, if not the world, where we're looking after the top end of Australia. We're probably the only region that has an international border. And the cultural aspects of coronavirus had a huge impact on our patch. We deal with a large amount of Indigenous communities, so we had a whole different array of biosecurity restrictions and limitations for Indigenous communities. We had the Torres Straits area, which borders on PNG, so we had that international component and international airport. So Cairns on its own entity in the far northern area of Queensland relies heavily on tourism. So there was a huge impact on the local and the social environment with regards to tourism, particularly from Asia and the travel throughout the Indigenous community. So the pleasant side that I saw was people just, they accepted, and there was always questions, but they accepted the and as I mentioned earlier, about being honest and interactive with people, and communication is the key. Keeping those lines, we had people that didn't understand, but were happy. They were comfortable where we were and what we were doing and what we wanted to achieve. So keeping them aligned to the outcome. Probably on a disappointing fact was the overreaction for those who took it on themselves to take social media. And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of social media and it's a wonderful asset to have, but it also can be your Achilles heel as well. So a lot of people took some more heedance out of social media and a more opinionated context than evidence-based context. And we had to spend a lot of energy trying to quell that or temper that, where we could have spent that energy in a more proactive sense.
So putting out not literal fires, but social media fires, taking up a lot of your time during that situation, I guess.
That's correct, yeah. The metaphorical fires, the social media aspects, was certainly probably the biggest challenge for us.
I'm curious as to, as we move forward, what you think we will need from our system leaders. I'm talking all levels of government, policymakers. What approach do you think needs to be taken there for this to be a successful navigation of a crisis?
I think that when we talk crises, and we're talking, you know, pandemics, and in this particular type, a global type issue, I very much believe that those who are in the position of a strategy and policy need to give some credence to the local level. So it's good to have an overarching concept, which may give us an outcome, but I think there needs to be some credence given to the local level on how to achieve that outcome. So where we have in the past, traditionally, we've had policymakers and the like, process developers, who feel that this is the best way to do something or the best way to deal with something, but it doesn't necessarily address the issues at the local level. And as I mentioned before, the Indigenous communities. So that is something on its own, that each community has its own needs and its own wants. And that is something that we certainly promote here, is about local solutions to local issues. We provide the overarching or the guidance or the outcome, whatever that is. We seek the alignment, but we're not necessarily driving to ensure that everyone is in agreement. If everyone's in agreement, then maybe we've missed something. And it's important to have that honesty and criticality about yourself to take on advice and to go seeking some feedback. And have that ability to have a deep dive within yourself to go, am I doing this the right way? Is there a better way of doing this? And if it's not going in the right direction, have that ability to be honest with yourself to say, did I play a role in this?
Adam, I'll move on in a moment to some subjects other than the pandemic. But just before I do, I'd like to ask you whether there have been any other observations that have stood out or that you might have had and thought that's noteworthy about life and leadership amid this pandemic.
We now have a new norm. What was normal 12 months ago no longer exists and will never return to that. It's a wonderful movement towards their people being more self-reliant. We use the term resilience, and I think sometimes we overplay it. I think that now we've become more reliant, more self-reliant than reliant on others. And it is certainly something that I'm seeing in the youth from their level about that disconnection and then the reconnection. If I could share an observation with you, Rebecca, if there's one thing out of this whole pandemic that really brought back to me was going home in the afternoon from sitting in a workplace and overviewing a region and how it's operating, and driving down my street, and people were sitting outside on their front lawns and having a conversation. It is something that took me back to my childhood, and I thought, wow, this is fantastic. People were, they were doing the right thing. They were social distancing. They were remaining within their grounds, but they were sitting on their chairs, and whether they're having a cup of tea, a glass of water, or a cold beer, whatever the case may be, and having a conversation across a road and just spending time again with each other. I just think that is something that has been a wonderful outcome out of such a an interesting environment.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's a shame to think that that's a nostalgic kind of feeling for us, that that's how life used to be. It really would be wonderful if that could return to being our new normal, where people are getting together and talking to one another.
I will actually add, just to finalise that off, that that is something that we have continued now. So with our neighbours, it's not unusual now to sit outside on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon and have a beverage and just discuss the weekend and the week. So yeah, we've continued that, and I hope that that continues for everyone. I hope everyone seizes the opportunity and uses it.
How wonderful. I hope that that happens too. And I hope that more people out there are doing it, and we see more and more of it, and communities coming together in person and having a genuine connection. That would be a fantastic outcome of from what's been a not so fantastic part of our human history, I suppose. Adam, it would be really great if we could pivot a little bit and if you could share a bit about your experience with the Executive Challenge Academy. I'm interested to hear how you came to be a part of this program. What was your journey there?
So I came to the Challenge Academy as a learner many years ago, and I've been involved now for a few years. And the intent for me was to develop what I considered to be a weakness in my profile, and that was to learn more about political acumen and how that works and how that drives and the impacts. On a greater extent, understanding my professional commitment, but I was interested to learn more about that in other aspects in social and non-for-profit enterprise and so on. So that was the beginning of the journey for me. Spending the time in there, it's now developed into a high-level networking relationship. So I've had absolutely wonderful opportunities through the academy, from going from being a learner to actually being a supporter and taking people with me, working as a mentor for my staff and sharing the experiences with them, encouraging others to be part of it. And for me, the greatest asset, apart from obviously increasing my political acumen capability, but the networks that I've gained through the academy itself has been absolutely invaluable. It is certainly stuff that you can't, It's almost non-tangible. You can't put a price on it.
And what about how it might have impacted on your professional life? Have you seen any kind of benefits or advancements, things, enrichments even, to your career as a result of the interaction with the program?
I think the program, one of the aspects that I particularly enjoy is part of the guest speakers. And there's two of the guest speakers that I've seen several times and I still gain something out of it. It is Tahal with The Futurist, and I actually really enjoy the presentation by Christine Nixon. Both of those, I've taken aspects out of those key speakers and adopted that for my professional aspects, my career, and how I go about doing my daily business. It's given me the opportunity to take a more holistic approach and to look at items outside the square. I feel more comfortable in doing that now. But certainly the discussions and lessons learned from Christine Nixon's experience has also given me a different insight into organisations and community and what is value-based.
Just finally, Adam, it would be wonderful if you could share any ideas on leadership or personal experiences for those who are listening to this podcast today that are among the emerging leaders who are seeking to get to where you are.
My advice, and I'm using this currently with staff here, is when the opportunity arises, we go in ebbs and flows. There are times when we're really busy and we're making critical decisions based on information available to us there and then. I would ask that we don't maintain that speed. So I suggest to people that we need to take the opportunity to slow down, and we need to ask why. Why are we doing this? What benefit is it for? And then how are we going to go about it? It's about resetting the baseline. So we bounce off the old saying of reality is perception. And we've taken that back to perception is a center of areas that literally comes from your five senses, what you hear, what you see, smell, taste, feel. And that becomes your baseline. You add your experience to that. And unfortunately, we develop an unconscious bias or a subconscious bias, and it could be good or it could be bad. What we do then is we make decisions based on bias. And I ask the staff to slow down, ask why they feel that way or they think that way, and is that the right way to do business? So if I could bring it back to something very simple, slow down. Take the time to evaluate, ask why are you doing it, ask what do you want to achieve, and then ask how will you go about it.
Well, Adam, it's been just fantastic to hear your experiences and perspectives on leadership today, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I can only imagine how busy you must be. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, and thank you very, very much for taking the time to share those things with us.
Look, Rebecca, the pleasure is all mine, and I'm always happy to sit down and have a conversation with people about the future and about what they're seeing and how they're feeling. So thank you for the opportunity to share.